Welcome everyone yet again to another episode of Hip Hop Soiree. You got me, DJ Goose.
And Bobby.
And we're here bringing you the stuff that we want to talk about. And this, our main topic is going to be about Jay-Z's album, The Blueprint. The reason for that is because recently it got put on a list of, it says culturally, historically, or aesthetically pleasing recordings, right?
Yeah, it was for the Library of Congress.
Yes. And only a handful of albums have been on there. I think Tupac has one in there. I think
NWA does
NWA
too.
NWA Radiohead has their album on there. So it's a really huge step because it's the first rap album like within like the 21st century to be put on that list.
I believe it's the first album of any sort from the 21st century to be actually, yeah. And the most recent, meaning like it's the youngest, so to speak, album that has been placed into that registry.
And we'll probably talk a little bit more about what it means, if it's aesthetically more pleasing or historically or culturally. We'll go about talking about that a little bit later. But first, we want to bring up two bits of news that just recently happened within the past week. And we're going to start off with Cardi B, because this one, I am shocked at how many people are defending her. So if you don't know what's been going on, so Cardi B, a few years ago, I think it was on a Snapchat or an Instagram post or Twitter, where she stated that she used to drug men. Like, she'd say, like, oh, let's have sex. And then when they get there, she'd drug them and they'd pass out. She'd go and steal their money. And that was that. And so I guess this resurfaced a few days ago, and she tried to make a huge, like, response to it, like crying, like
she tried giving justification.
Yeah, she was like, so you don't know, you know, he's like, I had to do what I had to do to get by. And I'm like, that's BS. I mean, maybe that's true. I mean, I can understand that, but that doesn't make any of your wrongs justified, like you said.
Yeah. Well, I think if they said that the video that she posted was 3 years old, if I'm not mistaken,
mm-hmm.
and she's in the she's been very famous for the past, what, 2 years, right? Give or take.
Something like that, yeah.
But she was, from my understanding, a pretty famous stripper years before that, because she was on that one of those hip-hop shows on MTV. I don't know. I don't watch that stuff. I think it's trash, to be honest. But so she was already getting good money because Mona Scott, that director, that's why she sings about her in Bodak Yellow.
Yeah.
Like, you were already getting paid good money. So how much more money did you truly need? Because as far as I'm concerned, I mean, strippers that are that famous probably get pretty damn good tips and money. So how much more did you? I don't know. I guess, the situation, the circumstances, but...
What was her whole intention behind robbing
you, just
these
getting
guys?
More money. That's yeah. The only thing I can think of. And how much more money do you need?
It just doesn't, I don't know, like you said, she was a famous stripper. I guess she had a huge clientele. Like, I'm not sure, you know, names and everything, but I mean, and I think Bobby said this off air that, you know, a lot of people probably don't want to come out and confront her about being drugged, and probably more importantly for them, being robbed, because they don't want their significant other or this
finding out about their other lifestyle. Like,
yeah.
My brother and I were watching, and I think is what was it? I think like Drugs Inc. or whatever. It was, I think, on the National Geographic Channel. One of those cool documentaries that kind of go into the underground stuff and stuff people don't necessarily see, and just, you know, journalism. So the person can't really be prosecuted for it. And it showed an escort / stripper, and that was her tactic. She would find men, drug them, cuff them, and she said it was easy money because the men didn't want Underworld Inc. Thank you. That's what it was called. The men didn't want their wives or whoever finding about that lifestyle, so they would never report it to the cops, because if they report, then obviously there's the follow up and all of the attention that goes to it. So they'd get robbed and just try better luck next time. So so that's probably like a sense of security for her. She probably realized that, but now that she's a celebrity status, someone called her out on. I mean, no one really called her out. She posted it herself on social media, so.
Yeah,
it's on her. You don't have to snitch on you. You snitch on yourself.
Yeah, and like I said, these people, I mean, they probably won't, you know, go and accuse her or try to get some sort of court dealings with it, because they don't want to be found out that they hired her as a stripper and were going to have sex with her. That was their intention. But again, we shouldn't justify and be on her side on that, because that was wrong. Like, we talk about, like, you know, men and their rape culture, and just rape culture in general, of how it was, like, accepted to a certain degree.
Yeah.
The same thing here. This is just, it's not rape culture, but it was something that was wrong, regardless of the reasons behind it. And if you want to have another talk, as we said, if you want to have an ethics talk about whatever, mean, it's a case by case thing, but this is just wrong. She even said, I drugged him.
Yeah.
And she confessed.
No, she admitted it.
Yeah, she confessed, but there's no names, and she probably won't get, like, she probably won't have any charges on her. I doubt that.
I doubt she will too, which is odd. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she'll even lose endorsements for it. I don't think she has yet.
I think we're in this society where it's like all about women empowering. They're like, you know, you did what you had to do. You go, girl. I'm like, no, don't well, drug it.
The thing is, I actually saw some of those, like, I don't know if it's Twitter. I saw it on an article, and it would pull examples of people sending messages. And it was one who said, because back in 2013, I can't remember what, I think it's You Don't Even Know with Rick Ross. And how he lost his Reebok endorsement because in one of the lyrics he talks about drugging a girl. She didn't even know it.
Yeah.
Woke up in the morning. They had sex. She didn't even know it. So he lost a lot of money through that. But people are like, that's because he's a man. So because she's a female, she can do it.
Yeah. But also Rick Ross kind of shot himself in the foot that because when he tried to explain it, as like it was even worse. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's just... It's a song. I'm not saying that he's done it.
I'm not saying he's done it, but he wrote a bad line, and his explanation was even worse. So
you know what I find odd about this, which isn't something we should delve into right now because I could go on for hours for it, but let's take it from a musical perspective, right? Mm-hmm. He talked about rape. What's a big show right now that's about to be the final season that's about to air this month that has a lot of rape and a lot of murder, but people love it?
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, so why is it okay to watch someone who scripted it and is now acting it out versus someone putting in a lyric?
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying rape is okay, and it's definitely not.
But it's portrayed
There is something that is visual reference of women or whoever, men, getting raped, and they're like, oh, they never bash on the show, but a rapper talks about it, and all of a sudden it's a big deal. I'm just saying it seems like an odd double standard to me.
That's something we should probably dive into, like, the difference between the different media of songs, the culture, and who says what.
Yeah.
I think that's a good topic for future reference.
Yeah, just say it's just the thought process for me.
There's other stuff that happens with it, with what rappers say versus what we see in the media.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you're condemning murder and all that stuff. But there's tons of shows that are all about murder.
They glorify
it. And they're like, oh, this is really good. Like, I want to see how they murdered this person. Like, okay.
So I just find it funny that there's those distinctions between the medias, and it's okay on a show. But anyways, we'll make it an episode.
Yeah, we'll make it an episode. And so this last piece of news, you know more about it because I'm have almost no, yeah, I don't have much input in it. But
yeah, Nipsey Hussle, he was shot and slain on Sunday, and it was in front of his store Marathon, Southern Los Angeles, and he's a rolling 60s Crip, and the community over there liked him. I mean, I was never part of the community. I liked some of his songs, specifically his latest album being Victory Lap. I really enjoyed that one. But back in 2013, he gained notoriety because he had 1,000 mixtapes that he was selling at $100 a piece so that he could donate. I can't remember what specifically cause he donated to.
Uh-huh.
But when Jay-Z got word, he liked them, and he personally bought 100 of the mixtapes himself so that he could promote the cause on Nipsey's behalf. And then I believe from that point, 2013, is when he gained a lot more mainstream success and a lot of people hearing about who he was and what his message was. He meant a lot to the community, obviously, because I think he gave back to it. Even after obtaining a wealth of money, he stayed in that community to help build businesses and promote empowerment, knowledge. I think he even helped like with programs to help kids with like math and reading and all that stuff. So it's weird. And I actually read an article today that a bunch of gangs in that area are calling some sort of peace treaty. I don't know how long it'll last, but I guess peace for a little bit of time is better than none at all. So,
yeah. And, you know, it's always a sad thing to have that happen, especially if it's a murder like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we had Mac Miller who died a few months ago due to drug overdose. And most of the time we had, I don't know if XXXTentacion's a rapper. I didn't hear him too much because I wasn't really big into him or his music at the time, but he got shot as well. So it's very sad when they either succumb to addiction or to violence.
Yeah.
Either because of what they were before they got famous or during it or whatever it may be. So, you know, hopefully their family, their friends are doing better or having some sort of comfort or counseling or something to help him get through this tough time because it's hard for everyone.
Well, he had a two kids, if I'm not mistaken. One is, I'm sure, his. I'm not sure that one, but I know he had a fiance. They were going to get married sometime soon. But yeah, it's just what happened. It's kind of the whole thing where this had nothing to do with hip-hop beef, so to speak. Again, we've talked about it before in other podcasts. Beef, I enjoy beef, to be honest, because I think it makes the competition, you know, steel sharpens steel. But when it comes to, like, Tupac and Big and violence becomes the end of it, it's not necessarily what's cool about it. But, again, this wasn't a beef of any sort, not that I'm understanding of it, but...
What was the circumstances on why? Was he getting robbed?
No, he was just out there, and some guy rolled up and popped in and shot him in the head and the chest. And then I guess there were two other people that were injured as well, and then he drove away with some woman in a getaway car. And they caught him at some 29-year-old, affiliated, I'm assuming, with some sort of gang. But again, I didn't read enough into it. I just saw that he had passed, and I know some people from that area that really liked him. And he meant a lot to them, and the music meant a lot to them.
Yeah. Condolences to all those. But, you know, we could spend a lot of time on that and on tragedies. And maybe one of these podcasts will talk about tragedies in hip-hop. Of different artists who have passed away under not dying, you know, in a natural cause. But we'll save that for another time. So to go on a lighter note, we do want to talk about Jay-Z's album, The Blueprint, that came out in 2001. Now, like we said, this was put on the list of Congress of recordings that are aesthetically pleasing or culturally historically important in one way or another.
Yeah, one of the three, if not all three, two of the three, whatever the combination. But again, as he mentioned, culturally, historically, or aesthetically.
Which I hear that one. That one's kind of an odd one to put in with, like, culturally, historically, aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, what? But if anything, it's a unique one because it's at that point almost, it probably is completely subjective, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, and we'll talk about, I guess, in the development of the album itself, but I think it is extremely aesthetically pleasing when you listen to it as an album. And I actually didn't, I'm a big Jay fan, obviously. If you've been hearing this podcast, you know he is my absolute favorite rapper. Hands down, so followed by very second close Nas. But I didn't even know that this was a thing. It was a friend of mine, Gracie, who sent me the text, and I read it. I was like, oh, that's cool. I didn't even know that. So... she sent me that, and that's kind of like, oh, we might as well talk about that because that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, let's talk about it because it is a very important album, not just to Jay-Z, but I think overall in hip-hop because of what was going on both in Jay-Z's life and in America and in hip-hop. There are three different, I think these are three different things we'd have to talk about before I actually go into the actual album. One thing, let's talk about hip-hop. This is what I was learning in... I was reading interviews and different articles that talked about The Blueprint. And one of the things that they were talking about was that at this time, a lot of hip-hop was straying away from sampling, and they were going to more keyboard effects and doing all that. Like, one thing I think about is, like, you know, Snoop Dogg's songs. He was a lot of keyboard, Dr. Dre using. No more samples anymore. They just kind of were going their own, which is also good as well. You want to make your own beats and your own melodies and all that.
And it evolves, too.
Yeah, and evolves, too. And Jay-Z, with The Blueprint, was like, no, let's bring this all back. Because almost all of his songs, I think it's only maybe two or three, that have samples in it. And Takeover has three. So, I mean, that is, at that point, I don't know if it was unheard of, but the way that it was mixed, which was by Kanye, which we'll get to talk to him about a little bit more, but that was just an amazing thing, like, in hip-hop of what was going on. Of how it changed it to be like, okay, let's get back into more sampling because this is what was working back when we started in the 80s and early 90s, and let's just get back to that. So that's one aspect. So then let's kind of go to his life. Like, what was going on, Papi, in his life currently right before recording The Blueprint?
Well, this is his sixth studio album.
Yes, so in 5 years.
In 5 years. So if you think about it, his first one, I believe, was in 96. It was Reasonable Doubt. And it's unique in and of himself. So he is an artist, which is hasn't happened before and still hasn't. He's one of the rare hip-hop artists where he has three what you would consider classic albums. And that's, again, not a thing that other people even have. But Reasonable Doubt being one, and I don't even think at this time Reasonable Doubt was even considered a classic. It was released in 96. It was much later realized as a classic moving forward. Blueprint, which is this one, his sixth studio album. And then the Black Album, which shortly came after back in 2003, which is 2 years after this sixth studio album. So at that time, you know, he comes up from the streets, works with Biggie Smalls. Big L, if you know who that is, was promoting him big. New York. He's a Brooklyn cat, so super heavy competition. And it was after the demise of Mr. Biggie Smalls, right? He's yep. untimely death, so to speak. And now who's going to be on the throne, right? Nas was a clear
contender. Fan
favorite for it, right? Mm-hmm. And Jay-Z had been promoting himself as, you know, the best. You know, he had the Life and Times of Sean Carter, Volume 1s, 2 and 3, all those. So when the time came around for him to drop the blueprint, one of the things about it was when you heard it, then it's like all of his claims are kind of making sense of being the top. Like, it was almost undisputed, not just in Brooklyn, not just in New York in general, but in the entire rap industry. And I'm trying to think of the other piece of it. It just slipped my mind. Sorry. then the beef in it, we talk about how Nas's beef catalyzed from the song Takeover, which had the three samples in it. He was going after Prodigy, who's also a New York rapper who's from Mobb Deep. Jadakiss, another New York rapper who's from New York. So, or he's from...
Is he from?
No, he's not from Queens. Yonkers. He's from Yonkers.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So it's like all this competition, stiff competition. He's soared above all of them with this because it's a unique sound. Rags to riches. He claimed the throne on this album, and that's what made it a classic.
Yeah, and what was cool about kind of adding to that is he said this when he was about to make Blue, right before he was about to, you know, go into production for it. He said, "I was at a point in my career where I'd finally made some serious money, and it didn't make sense to keep rapping about living in the projects. The next logical thing to do was to make some songs that would be nice to listen to at bath time." Now, that imagery is kind of odd. It's like at bathtub, because I think he called one of his producers and he said, "Hey, you're near your bathtub?" He's like, "No." It's like, "Get in your bathtub." And did like a little freestyle thing about soap. And the producer was like, "It's like, I don't know what to tell Jay." It's like, "But I didn't like it that much." But his whole goal was to, and I think this goes with the aesthetically pleasing, that he wanted to make songs that just at any time, anywhere you are, you want to listen to it, and it's just, you just want to listen to it at any time. It doesn't matter if you're at the gym, you're at home, you're driving, whatever. And I think the Blueprint really did that, because there's just so much mixture of the sampling and of his own like reflections and perspectives on things that it's just like you said, it's just nice to listen to.
It's soulful, it's jovial, it's exuberant. Like some of the tracks are far more serious undertones. Right. But in essence, I mean, it kind of takes you through a wave of emotions of his. Because I know that 444 gained a lot of attention based off his personal like sharings, but I've always said, if you really listen to a lot of his albums, he shares a lot of personal stuff.
Yeah,
and he kind of takes you through the motions of why I did this. He always has some sort of prediction, right? He says, "I'm gonna do this," and an album two or three later, he finally gets to claim, "I did it," right? Mm-hmm. And it's this album specifically in the song Renegade that he does with Eminem.
Yeah,
he says, "Big, I did it multi before I die." Well, they both did a song with P. Diddy back in the day where B.I.G. says he wants that he knows Jigga will be Fortune 500 eventually.
And he did.
By the blueprint, he was like not that he was in a Fortune 500 company, but he had amassed enough wealth to be that guy.
And going on to right before we talk about the actual album, there's one thing that I thought was really cool. And this is what Jay-Z said when he was about to start recording and producing the Blueprint. And he was talking to Just Blaze and to Kanye West. And Kanye West, like, I guess he heard like samples and stuff that he was doing, and Jay-Z was like, "I got to get this kid now." And he wrote, I think it was on Izzo's, one of the big singles that came from the album, and he was like impressed. He's like, "I wasn't even supposed to be on this, but dang, did it come out well." Sampling the Jackson 5.
Yeah, he sampled Jackson 5, like, again. People hate on the guy, but he knows his music.
If he does production on it, you know it's going to be great.
It's going to be very good. The song could be trash, but yeah, the sound quality, fantastic.
You're like, "Oh yeah, that was good." But and this is kind of like what I'm about to say to you is the reasons why he calls the album Blueprint. So he says this, right? He had this speech, and he says, and Jay says, "Imagine if you could take an X-ray of a house. You'd get a perfect snapshot of the lives of the people inside. You'd see their clocks, their ceramic frogs, their sleeping nests, their clocks, everything intimate would be revealed. Well, guess what? there actually is such a thing as an x-ray for a house, and it's called a blueprint. Now, there's no such thing as a blueprint for people, but if there were, it'd be this album. I want this album to be honest. I'd be an honest snapshot of who I am from the inside out, which is a man who loves having nicknames and hates Nas. And they're like, let's get to it.
I love the beef, man. It's so good.
It really is. Like you said, he explains everything about his about how he is in his life. Obviously, he's very transparent about his beef with Nas, and especially in the takeover. And I think that's, you know, his imagery of what he wants the album to be is what makes him a great artist, because he has this focus of what he wants an album, and he wants that to be the theme of all the songs that circle it. And I think that's why everyone should appreciate it, whether you like rap or not. Like, you got to listen to this and you can really picture who he is. You don't have to listen to any of his albums after that. I'm not saying that they're not great, but he's always done it from the beginning, and this is a clear point, a clear album that states that. So right before we go into the album, just a quick little thing. What happened in 2001? Obviously, Poppy.
I mean, literally, this album dropped on 9/11.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would imagine anyone listening to this is old enough to remember what 9/11 was, but the terrorist attacks. The album literally released that same day. And within a week, it amassed over 400,000 copies being sold, which is, it was impressive by any means, more so especially during a time of that, like where, I guess that turmoil, so to speak, as a country. Another thing was it wasn't meant to be released on September 11th.
Nope.
They pushed it up because there was so much hype around it because they had released H to the Izzo, and people were like, this album's going to be phenomenal. They started bootlegging it, right? They made copies. So if you think about it, they probably sold out hundreds. Hundreds of copies were probably dished out, and he lost sales in that regard. Not that it matters. He still made a ton. But with that going on, I think I was saying to you earlier, that's where I don't know if this is maybe the reasoning for them to put it in the Library of Congress. I think that the album captures and embodies kind of the essence of USA, right? The whole American dream, rags to riches. You can do whatever you want as long as you have a work ethic, apply yourself, and just like kind of reach for the stars. And if you listen to the album kind of in its entirety, it's kind of that realization of I've put in the work. So many years later, I finally got to where I deserve to be, and now I'm king of the world. Who's going to stop me? Kind of that like USA mentality of we're the best country of all time. No one can top us.
We know it.
Looking at where we're at now, if you look back then, I mean, in essence, overall, everything was better back then in terms of morally where we sit as maybe a country. We have all these people just being – social media crucifies people for the smallest things, right? We're talking about Cardi B doing something terrible, which she did.
Yeah.
But there are other people that do things far less significantly terrible, and they get socially crucified. So I don't know. It seems odd. I think everyone's such a villain, or everyone's such a hater, quick to be annoyed. And back then it was far more – entertaining to just be alive and walk around. It seemed happier. I don't know. I mean, I was 11 back then, so maybe it could have been different for me, that life perspective. But I think it embodied and encompassed kind of just the attitude of USA.
Yeah,
and which was much better back then.
Yeah. So like you said, it's like a little still screenshot.
Yeah.
And to go back to listen to it just kind of takes us back to that time.
It's a memory. It's a nostalgia that was encompassed and encapsulated in 14 tracks or however many tracks is on there.
There's also those hidden tracks as well.
They call it hidden, but yeah, it's on the album, yeah, so I don't see why it's hidden.
I don't know why they call it that, but so let's actually get to the actual album, the songs and everything. So I hadn't listened to this album in years, actually, like in its entirety. And going and us, you know, wanting to do a review on it, I listened and I just honestly was dumbfounded. I was like, how did he write this in the time frame that he told us? Because the production, I think, was like 2 weeks. Like, everything was done like two, and he wrote the lyrics in 2 days.
Yeah, they say he stepped in the booth. All the producers say that they saw it, witnessed it firsthand. He didn't get samples of all of the songs. He recorded in the studio over the course of 2 days the entirety of the album.
And I don't understand how. I look back at each song. It's like, how the hell did he do that? His flow, the way that he delivers, like, and he's witty on the songs too. Like, I don't understand. Like, he honestly is a lyrical genius. Like, there's no other way.
the extended metaphors, especially on my like probably my favorite song on the album, Girls, Girls, Girls. Just he continues and stays on topic for the metaphor, which I'll talk to it in a little bit when we break down some of our favorite songs. But agreed. As far as the amount of content, you have to listen to many songs multiple times to really hear what he's saying.
I'm a musician myself, and I've written songs and all that, and I can honestly say, like, I have to write, rewrite again. Maybe the melody of the of what I want to sing is also takes into factor where I have to change that as well. But either way, like, I can't give him enough praise for what he did in this album, and he did some of the catchiest things in the song, in the album. Like, I kind of want to dive into the songs now. Like Izzo. That song has just a sick chorus, has a sick everything.
Well, like, it's the anthem, so get your damn hands up.
Yeah, like it's just some very simple stuff, and it's like his whole like it's his whole bragging stuff. I mean, I mean Hova, like short for like Jehovah.
Yeah,
like calling himself God, the MC, God. Yeah, yeah, which is
Jehovah,
and that's true. Like this, I think this cemented his place as being like top dog, like Jadakiss. Anyone else, like, they can't touch him right now. They're going to try to elevate themselves to his standard. And, like, Izzo was just really good. I love the Jackson 5 beat from I Want You Back. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, you know that beat. Or if you don't know, you're just like,
why does it sound? It sounds familiar. Yeah.
And like I said, Kanye West, like, he took it, like, it sounds familiar. But he didn't take, like, the main part, like, do-do-do-do-do-do. He didn't take that part. He played another part into it. And you're like, what? How?
He picks an unfamous part of the song. Yeah. Like, the it's recognizable, but it's not the part. It's not the thing that people are like, that's exactly I Want You Back.
Yeah.
You can hear the piece like, oh, I get it. But he picks the unpopular part.
Or you're like, why does it sound so good? Why does it sound so familiar? And that makes you want to listen to it again. Like, again, Kanye West, I'll give you props. This sounds good. You're smart.
He really is.
Mother Chucker.
Well, that's his first album. As you mentioned, yeah. He got picked on for it. And obviously, look at the stellar career he's had. Timbaland was on that album. Not that he wasn't famous by then, but kind of shows you the caliber of people he wanted on it. And then Just Blaze.
Yeah, Just Blaze.
I think it was his first appearance as well. And Just Blaze goes on to be on pretty much every other album except for some of the recent ones.
Which makes sense. Like, I'd want him on there too.
Just Blaze has fantastic beats too. So, yeah, and H to the Izzo, it has kind of like, he paints a picture of the projects, right?
Mm-hmm.
Life story sold through rap. Niggas acting like I sold you crack. Like I told you to sell drugs. No, Hov did that. So hopefully you won't have to go through that. And then I like it because he goes, I was raised in the projects, which is projects, but he switches the word to rhyme. Roaches and rats, sellers out back, selling the mama sofa, ladies on the corner, focus on the kinfolk. Like, he paints the entire picture of a project, and you can see the lady in the window looking down on the corner where he's got the crack in his palm, and he's looking out for cops, and people are out back selling sofas and TVs, trying to get money so they can buy the crack that's in his hand. Like, it was a nice, again, like I said, extended metaphor that stayed on topic and said he did what he did so that nobody else had to go through that.
Yeah, and it's great that he could do that imagery and not necessarily talking about a great point in his life. Like you said, it's a struggling point in his life, but he did it with an upbeat song. Kind of like you said, they did that with a message as well, like way in the 80s. And so it was awesome to see him bring that back.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about another... one of your favorite songs you said was Girls, right?
Girls, yeah, Girls, 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 Girls. Just because... and it's a song that probably wouldn't fly today, given kind of where...
It's funny because, like I said, there's lots of stereotypes in it. Talking about the Indian girl, the Peruvian girl, his project girl.
Yeah, he talks about a hypochondriac. Yeah, so he just has... It's witty. Again, so like in each verse, I think he references anywhere from 4 to 5 girls that he's messed around with or is in like some sort of type of relationship. So in the first one, I think he goes, that Spanish chick, black chick, Indian and black. That's fried chicken, curry chicken. Damn, I'm getting fat. Arroz con pollo, French fries and crepe. An appetite for destruction, but I scraped the plate. Because he goes and breaks down, like he starts the verses structured with the first like 4 bars. He talks about a specific type of girl. I met this Indian squaw the day that I met her. Asked her what tribe she with, red dot or feather. So, and squaw is like an indigenous word for woman, which could be taken derogatory. So again, yeah. Kind of the whole theme. And so he introduces the girl and kind of what ethnicity or whatever her categorization is. And then after that, he goes in for another anywhere from 6 to 8 bars about whatever they do. Like a stewardess chick that fluffs up his pillow on the flight in first class. So, and then it's just so clever. To your point, he did all of these songs in just 2 days without hearing the beat first.
Yeah, it doesn't.
He just would listen to beats like, okay, this is good. This is how it's going to be on that track.
And I loved this song. The what it hooked me when it hooked me was when I first heard Bismarck, because I love Bismarck. I love him. I love girls. I love that. And I was like, oh, and there's the two other people, and I don't know off the top of my head who they were, but there's two other people that do that hook part as well. And it's not Bismarck, because I think he does it the first time, because the other two are separate people. So there's three people in total who do that hook part. And that's just a good like good song to like listen to and just kind of jam to with your girl. Yeah.
What are your favorite songs on that album then? Because he has a lot of, right? If you think, that's probably why it's so good too. There's songs that are pretty significant from him. H the Izzo, obviously, it might even be considered played out because so many people played it. But so there's Girls, 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 which may not be as common. If you listen to him, then obviously you know that song. There's
he had four singles. So he had Izzo, he had Girls, 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 he had
You Don't Know.
Was it You Don't Know? I thought it was my mind went blank.
Heart of the City?
Song Cry.
Song Cry. Well, because he got nominated for a Grammy for that
right,
one.
Right, but there's another one. I think it was one that you didn't like too much.
No, Jigga That Nigga.
Jigga That Nigga, that was
a single?
That was a single.
I didn't realize that. I thought it was Renegade.
I thought so too, but I have to double check. But they said there were four singles off that album.
Okay.
But I saw that. I was like, I don't know if that's correct, but that's what it said.
That's funny because that's not that it's an awful song. It's just my absolute least favorite from that whole album.
Yeah.
It's a toss up with some of the other ones because they're so damn good.
Jigga.
And speaking of Nas's beef with him, so Takeover addresses Nas, which we can get into that one in a little bit later. But funny enough, Renegade, which is on the same album that Jay-Z took a shot at Nas in another song, Renegade has only one feature rap artist with verses, and that happens to be Eminem, who also produced the beat for Renegade. Mm-hmm. That whole beat and that song was actually meant for Royce the 5'9".
Yeah.
But there was just a thing, and then Jay called up Eminem, and they decided to do a thing together, and they decided to do Renegade. And Nas, I even blame Nas for actually being like the whole competition of, if you have more than one rapper on what song, who won that song? Which I get the concept, but at the same time, I disagree, because if you have a lot of great artists on a song, the only people that win are, to me, the audience. Like, why wouldn't you want such good talent on one song?
Right.
So the concept of who had the better verse, that came from Nas, because in Ether, he said, Eminem murdered you on your own shit. And that's subjective, only because they both come from different standpoints. Jay speaks on behalf of the projects and, like, again, paints the picture. You know, lint in my pocket, back to the wall, ashy knuckles. Pockets filled with a lot of lint, not a cent, a lot of innocent lives lost on that project bench. And Eminem was just an angry man whose flow delivery was insane.
Yeah.
So it depends on what you like.
And he loved to just to jab at everyone. And yeah. So he's just an angry guy. He's like, I'll jab at you, come jab at me. I'll fight you. And he does that. He done that with tons of other artists. And so having him on there, I thought was, I liked it. That's why I like Renegade.
Well, Renegade, yeah. You had one who didn't care about, I guess, lawful structures, and then one who didn't care about society norms. He challenged the norm. That's where they're both renegades. They both spoke on their pieces for it.
And it's funny because I think both Jay-Z and Eminem realized that they had equal part in the song, because this is also featured on Eminem's greatest hits, Curtain Call.
Yep.
And I was like, that's odd. I swear it was written and it was for Jay, but he's like, I hadn't as many verses. I don't know if it's like, I haven't done the calculations, but they both keep switching on the verse and on the chorus. Like one time Eminem will sing the chorus part and then Jay-Z will switch and do the chorus.
As far as bars, I'm pretty sure it's 50-50.
Yeah.
You're right. One does the chorus first and they switch because I'm a motherfucking renegade. And they both had two verses. And
yeah.
They're very, I wouldn't say very long, but they're lengthy verses, which I always appreciate. I don't like short verses. That kind of bothers me.
Yeah, I can see that. My two songs that I really... that are my favorite would be Ain't No Love and Takeover. Ain't No Love is just, I actually fell more in love with the live version that he recorded.
With the Roots?
With the Roots. And I was like, damn, that's so good. But that song overall is really good. It just paints a picture, you know, of him. And the opening line, though, the opening line always kind of, I didn't understand, because he's like, first the Fat Boys break up, and every day I wake up, somebody got a problem with Hov. And I was just like, the Fat Boys, Fat Boys. I was thinking, who the heck are, I didn't know at the time, like, who the heck are the Fat Boys? And I listened to them. They're like this funny little rap group. I'm like, Fat Boy. It was just funny, like, hearing that that's the first part. Like, oh, like, he kind of painted a picture, like, something's going bad. Or,
yeah, well, something's going bad. Ain't no love. They were together. They were a group. They should have had each other's back. Yeah. Well, first they break up, and now every day I wake up, somebody's got a problem with me.
It was just
funny. What's all the fucking fussing for? Because I'm grubbing more?
Yeah, it was just the funniest thing. Like, it was kind of hard for me to, like, connect the whole picture that when he started with that. But from there, like, it's just a very powerful song, especially the vocals and the chorus, especially in the live version. That girl, whoever's singing, she's so powerful when she's singing that chorus. Ain't no love.
It's not a girl.
Is it a girl?
No.
That sounds like a girl.
It's not. It's Kanye literally, I'm not going to say ripped off the song. He obviously got rights to it.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yes. The live version, sorry.
And the live version does in the normal one. Yeah. It's a guy.
Yeah.
But I think you told me this. That song, he didn't just sample. He just like.
He took the whole thing. All Kanye did is literally take an old classic song by the same name. I believe it's called Heart of the City.
Yeah, Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City is the name of the song.
And then all he added was kicks from the snare and then a hi-hat sound. That's it. That's all he added. And he sped it up, I guess. So there's three things. But again, he realized that was so pure and perfect. He didn't have to do much. He just added the hip-hop aspects of the snare, hi-hat. I'm going to speed it up a bit just to make sure that the tempo's up to beat, and there's the gold. And it really is.
Yeah.
I can't fault him for doing that. As much as people want to, I can't fault him for that.
It's a great one. And we're running a little bit out of time. So I want to dive into the takeovers. The takeover, we've always talked about beefs, how you love beef. This is how you write a diss track. This is, like I said, this is the blueprint. You want a blueprint how to do it? This is how you do it. Because he attacks three people and then just generally just everyone who
he addresses anyone else who he doesn't feel deserves the time to address.
And he does it so magnificently. You do say that part that he's
I think it's just at the end he goes, and for all you other cats taking shots at Jigga, you only get half a bar. Fuck y'all niggas. And half a bar is two beats, right?
Yeah.
That's half a bar. So he says, you guys aren't even worth my time. You don't even get a full bar. You get half a bar. And that's it. Like, he's like, that's enough. You guys can't do anything about that.
Yeah, that's all it was. And oh my gosh, and so good. And so it was funny because he was talking about writing Takeover, and mainly it was only going to be about Nas. But then he's like, you know what? It's like, I need to address Prodigy. I need to address Mobb Deep in entirety of so he's like, okay, I'm going to add that. He actually had recorded the Nas part first, and then he put the Prodigy part first.
Yep.
Which I think actually works better because he addresses like Prodigy, which I don't know too much about their beef, but I don't think it was as
It's not as significant. I love Prodigy. I mean, don't get me wrong, Mobb Deep is classic in of their own right, but they aren't Nas, right? Yeah. Nas, like, and back then everybody also knew Mobb Deep was great, but Nas is the one that is the threat.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's like, I'm gonna address the threat last, I still got bars, I'm gonna address him, and then fuck the rest of you guys.
Yeah, and so the one by Prodigy was good, but the Nas one, he took so many shots at him, and dissecting it is probably one thing we have to do, because he goes talk about his discography, talks about his flow, his voice, like everything, and just destroys it. Like he says, like, I've only been in the game like for 5 years. He's been for 10.
Yeah, he's like Uchiwali, which was his bodyguard. His bodyguard's verse was better than his. And he goes, 4 albums in 10 years, nigga, I could divide. That's one, let's say every two. Two of them shits was due, meaning he owes people 2 albums. One was the other was Illmatic. That's a one hot album every 10-year average. So he uses math and critical acclaim of albums against him in the beef.
And he even addresses, like, Illmatic was great. And that's and he says, like, I'll give it to you. Illmatic was great.
It's a one hot album every 10-year average. Every decade, you'll get one.
And my favorite part is he's like, yeah, I sampled your voice. Like,
you was using it wrong.
You're using it wrong.
You made it a hot line. I made it a hot song.
I was like, oh my God.
It's, I love beef. I will say this, in regards to that beef, Nas still won, but that'll be an episode separate for sure.
Yeah, for but exactly the beef. But like I said, this is how you start diss tracks. Like Jay-Z is like, you're going to start this, and whoever wins at the end, if you're like Boppy, you're gonna have your popcorn. Oh, I can't wait to hear what he says next.
Yeah, I love it. I pop in the. I mean, I don't pop in anything anymore. I just you hit play on your phone or whatever, but it's great.
And so. What's funny though is, so there's this interview as well that talked about that actually that has a comment about Nas about this song. Now some of this I think he's just saying like figuratively, but he says this says that diss track hurt my feelings so bad. When I heard it, I was so embarrassed that I lied down on the ground and didn't move for 3 days. Then I got up, ripped off my nose, and fed it to a bird. After that, I felt fine. This is the first time I've thought of it since.
Who was this?
This was Nas. Oh. This is what Nas said. Again, he's saying some things very typically. I don't understand the whole rip off my nose and fed it to a bird thing, but those are his exact words about him listening to Takeover, which fueled him to, you know, respond back. And again, we'll talk about...
They beefed for years, and they produced some of the great songs.
And now they're, like, on, like... I don't know if they're not friends, but they're, like, on...
No, they're actually... I mean, they recorded together. They recorded Billionaire's Boys Club for the Magna Carta Holy Grail. Yeah. They helped promote each other's stuff. I wouldn't say they're... I don't know if friends in terms of super close, but they actually have worked and business partnered together, and they advocate for each other. So,
you just say like they're just
they're good.
They're acknowledging each other.
They're like, good acquaintances. I mean, they went on air with Sway, who's from Sway in the Morning. If you don't know who that is, and it wasn't that show. It was whatever he was.
Yeah, he's on TRL. You know who Sway is.
Yeah. And they squash their beef, and they're cool. Like they make music together. Okay. In fact, after that, on Hip Hop Is Dead, Nas's album, they recorded the song Black Republicans, which is a fantastic song. But
That one's a rare case where the beefs were like, they ended it, they're fine.
And they actually make music
together. I mean, overall, I mean, not about the beef itself, but overall, like, Nas wasn't able to continue on with, and there's different reasons for that. Not saying that he wasn't a skilled rapper, but there's just...
There's just different skill sets and just appeals.
But. Yeah, and again, I think Jay-Z said it first, like, he was making a lot of money, He also acknowledged like that when he was first getting money, he was spending on stupid crap, and now he wanted to invest it. And so now he is like fortunate. He made an empire of himself.
Yeah.
He invested in money. He has a beautiful wife, has kids. Like I think he is like the embodiment of the American dream of what like rappers
can do.
Rappers want to be, but they for some reason lose sight of it once they see the first check and they're like, I'm gonna spend it on this. On this Cadillac.
Yeah, he just had self-restraint. But again, there's a reason someone at work, Celeste, mentioned, like, there's a reason Congress put his album. It shows, like, his importance, what his stature is. Like, he is what rappers want to be.
And I think this is his album, kind of to go 360 on this, does embody culturally, historically, and aesthetically pleasing all three. Because it shows that you can make it. He is the American. He even talks about it in the blueprint. You're very good at saying the lines, but he says like, you know, put me somewhere.
Put me anywhere on God's green earth, and I'll triple my worth, motherfucker. That's on You Don't Know, and they ended up making a remix on that for Blueprint 2 with MOP, which is really really good too.
And then like I said, Jay-Z overall, like I think he's a great hip hop artist, but he's a great person to look up to aspire because he wasn't perfect, but he acknowledged his errors and corrected them and now is on top.
He's built it. He's made something out of himself, and he references it frequently in many of his songs in terms of, you know, bricks, which can refer to drugs but then he refers to how he's built up the projects with buildings and stuff. So it's excellent. Yes, I agree. Great album. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. If you have, listen to it again. It is definitely cruising music, as I like to play in the car. It sounds so good. You can sing along to it while you drive.
You got a hottie in the passenger seat. Put on Girls, 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 or Part 2.
No, unless they appreciate the wittiness of it, they may not appreciate it.
Maybe not.
Especially if they're like 20, because then they're social justice warriors, and we won't get into that either. But
just go and just.
One thing I haven't been doing, which I said I would like to do, is kind of introduce a song that is new to me that I've recently listened to. So I just quickly on that note, Cassie from work gave me a song, which it's from the artist Yella Wolf, who I really like. So I'm surprised I didn't come across this until she gave me the song. But he's like this white hick from Alabama, and he's signed to Eminem. Like, so I actually think he's underrated, which we can go over as well in great episode, I think. But he has a song called Catfish Billy, which is kind of a term for, I believe, just hicks in general. And kind of, he basically, the song is about him going through life just kind of how he is, the way he is in Alabama, country boy growing up in the Bible Belt. And at the beginning, there's this small little skit that they use from a movie. At first, I thought it sounded like Little House on the Prairie for whatever reason, but it wasn't. It was from Where the Red Fern Grows, and I had to go back to like think about in high school when I saw it in Film and Literature. But either way, it's just a really good song. I like the first verse because there's this natural progression. He kind of expresses his anger. It's like, I don't know if it's his alter ego or just his personality in general.
Uh-huh.
And this progression and the building of the aggression, and he finally like blows up. It's like, if I fuck you once, I'll fuck you sore. Fuck, shit, goddamn. Like, he goes nuts, and it's a really good song. So, again, Catfish Billy, Yellow Wolf, will include the link on the episode so you can actually listen to it. It's a good song.
Okay. You took me off guard. I'm trying to think.
Sorry, my bad.
No, you're fine. I can't really think of there's. Okay, so I'll give you one to listen to kind of prepare you for next week, or not next week, but the next time we record, which hopefully is in 2 weeks, we gotta do our research on, is about rap in Korean music. So there's K-rap, but there's also there's like rap in just in overall in the genre. Like they have K-pop groups. If you like the idols and stuff, they have a person who is you're the rapper. And so there's this one song from this girl group called Blackpink, and the song's called like Doo Doo Doo. It's like D-U-D-U. There's, like I said, I don't understand the Korean, but this girl's verse, I was like, what the freak? This sounds sick. And the lyrics are actually pretty cool too, but I would say go listen to that one, Blackpink. Like that's, go listen to that. They're really good. They have, whoever the rappers, I don't know them too much because I'm not like a huge fan of Blackpink, but I just heard this song. And I was like, this song is actually really good. But listen to that. We're going to go into a lot of different rap artists in Korean and K-pop. There's one that I would suggest you guys listen to who's Epic High. Our friend Jose, who shout outs to him because he gave us a list of tons of people to listen to.
Yes, I appreciate the list.
The one I know, though, is Epic High, and I do know they do some songs in English. And they have lots of parts where they actually say their lines in English. So if you want to get prepared and hear about some of the artists we can listen to. One that I know for sure does some English parts is Epic High. So go listen to them. Anything else before we...
No, just as always, again, we're going to do this K-Rap. I don't know what the official
term
is.
I'll say K-Rap, sure.
I'll say K-Rap because Jose, again, a friend of ours requested it. Happy to do it for him. We're happy to do it for any fan. If you guys have subject matter, a artist you want us to review, whatever, a concept you guys want us to go over in a podcast, email us hiphopsoiree2018@gmail.com. Soiree is spelled Soiree 2018@gmail.com. We're happy to take suggestions, whatever. If you have thoughts, we're glad to give you guys shout outs or share whatever your thoughts are, even on a topic we discussed on a previous hip hop soiree episode. But yeah, send us your suggestions.
Yep. Thanks so much for listening, guys. This is Hip Hop Soiree. This is DJ Goose.
And this is Poppy.
And we'll see you later.